Well, hello, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. Welcome back to the Paul Revere Show. You know, we started this show earlier this year to talk about democracy in Wisconsin, democracy in the United States. And on June 24, 2022, our democracy changed in a very fundamental way. Rights that women have had for almost 50 years, you know, the huge hunk of my lifetime, just evaporated, just disappeared. And we're going to spend tonight's show talking about the implications of this decision by the U.S. Supreme Court and what it means. And I'm really, really honored and delighted to have Kelda Royce, Senator from, 36? Is that, am I right?
26, close enough.
26, excuse me. There we go, right? We're fallible. With us here to talk about the issues.
Recording Kelda, in progress.
Kelda told us or warned us over a year ago that this day was imminent, and here we are. So welcome, Kelda, and maybe just before we jump in, introduce yourself to our listeners, you know, what you're doing currently and how you got here and what your involvement with this key issue has, or these key issues have been over the years.
Good to be with you, Mark. I too am an attorney, and I was the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Wisconsin for 4 years. So I've been working on this issue and warning people about the risk to Roe v. Wade for my entire adult life. I then served a couple terms in the assembly. I started a small business, and now I serve the people of Madison in the Wisconsin State Senate.
So let's jump into it. As someone that's been watching this issue, as a woman who is completely involved, as a, you know, this decision impacts women more than anybody else in one way. What happened on June 24th? What happened with the Supreme Court? And what do you think its implications are?
Well, the Supreme Court traded away its legitimacy for the rights, the well-being, and the health of every single woman in this country. And they decided to go against all precedent, go against what they had sworn up and down under oath at their confirmation hearings they would not do. And they jettisoned 50 years of precedent and the long line of cases even before that that had talked about the right to privacy. And obviously we don't want a government that is so powerful it can fit inside your uterus in your doctor's office. And they did so to impose their narrow religious views on all the rest of us, an unwilling majority of Americans. And the only reason that they were able to do that is because we have a form of government, as you well know, that gives the minority inordinate power over the majority. And specifically, it magnifies the political power of Republicans, the way that the Senate is composed, the Electoral College, and the rampant gerrymandering that we've seen and voter suppression over the last decade has really entrenched Republican power in a way that they feel totally free to impose their will on the rest of us, even if we don't want it, because they know they can't very well face accountability at the ballot box, because they've got unequal power.
So let's just sort of go back. You've been studying this issue and its history and the issue of women's control over their reproductive systems, reproductive rights. How does this match up historically? You know, the majority's decision written by Alito really touches on, I think, and create sort of new facts as opposed to real facts.
Yeah, it's really stunning. And I think sometimes the way it's reported it's reported by people who don't actually know the history. And so they just sort of take what he says at face value. Alito has manufactured basically a cherry-picked alternate history that did not occur. It's no surprise that abortion wasn't mentioned in the Constitution when women weren't people, Black people weren't people. You know, it was written by wealthy white men for one purpose, which was to put together a government that would be limited in its ability to interfere in individual liberty. But that said, abortion was common. It was a normal part of people's reproductive lives. There were open advertisements during the time of the founding and really up till the mid 1800s, you know, abortion was pretty normal. There were tinctures and herbs and midwives that would help people restore their menses. That's what they talked about, restoring your period. And it really was with the medical community, physicians were sort of moving away from their past as barbers and trying to professionalize and trying to shut out competition, especially from midwives and herbalists who had traditionally provided a great deal of care to women. They really wanted to consolidate power and shut out the competition, and criminalizing abortion was one way that they could do that. It also, the arguments that were used to criminalize abortion back in the mid 1800s were some of the same kinds of racist arguments that you see today. The anxiety about a declining white Protestant birth rate and the hordes of immigrants coming, you know, in that case from Ireland or from Italy or other places where there would be a lot of Catholics that were having a lot of babies. And so the same kinds of racist and, you know, animosity towards outside groups was used that we're still seeing today in the modern right-wing political movements.
So the in terms of your analysis and study of the past, when did it really get this sort of religious overtone that sort of driven the question? And it's really, it's sort of created a schism within the Christian community, mm-hmm. you know, between, you know, the this sort of a very fundamentalist evangelicals versus the, mm-hmm. the mainline Protestant churches. How did you see that develop?
This is a shocking thing to, I think, so many people who see this as really a fundamental religious question, or, you know, people's faith practices. When does life begin? All this stuff. None of these early criminal laws had anything to do with concern about fetal life or embryos or anything like that. Instead, in the 60s and 70s, what you had were racist white churches that were concerned they were going to lose their tax-exempt status. They wanted to maintain that and continue building political power. And they saw Roe v. Wade and the issue of abortion as a really cynical way to functionally trick people into voting for Republicans so that they could goose the vote and increase their political power. And it was a totally deliberate strategy. It was manufactured, the idea that we're going to basically manipulate people into doing our political bidding. And that's the origin of the modern anti-choice movement, you know, in the years just before and after Roe v. Wade. And unfortunately, you know, the crazies are now driving the bus and they're now occupying a majority of seats on the Supreme Court.
So let's sort of get to this schism. I think I was reading, it's like over 66%, 67% of the eligible voters. Is that the right number or?
I mean, over the decades, the numbers have been very consistent. 2/3 of Americans want to see Roe v. Wade upheld. And the numbers go up even more if you say, you know, should abortion be legal in any circumstance, some circumstances, right? So there are people who say, I'm pro-life, but I think it should be legal in X, Y, and Z situations. Well, guess what? Then you don't want to see abortion become a crime nationwide in all circumstances, which is what is now the goal of the Republican Party.
So you know, this is really sort of astounding to me because Blackmun wrote Roe v. Wade. I mean, he was at the time a conservative and a Republican appointee, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, and it was not a controversial decision. It was 7-2. They, you know, they had a broad majority of the court, and it really was not, you know, the bombshell that I think people thought it was, right? People, you know, physicians were in favor of it. Clergy were in favor of it. They worked to obtain safe abortion care for women with the underground network because they had seen the terrible implications of women dying from unsafe, illegal abortions.
So we have a half a century, and we have six, you know, two thirds of America that really believed in the status quo mm-hmm. before Dobbs, before this decision last week. The first impact, right, is going to be those folks that are like right now thinking about what do I do if I'm in a situation where I'm considering an abortion. Right. So in the state, what happens to folks right now in terms of that immediate threat?
So last Friday, all of the current abortion providers in Wisconsin basically said we're taking a pause. It's unclear how or whether the 1849 criminal abortion ban that was still in the statute books is going to be employed. And so we're going to coordinate abortion care for people out of state safely. Now, we're in a very different situation than we were in the 60s and 70s. Thank goodness. We have safe medication abortion that people can safely access online, and they can self-manage their abortions. It is safer than Tylenol. You want to make sure you're going to a reputable site because there are a lot of anti-choice fake sites out there. But Aid Access, like I'm going to aid you and help you, aidaccess.org is probably the best one. And they will, you can fill out a questionnaire. You can even get an advanced prescription for an abortion and just keep it in your medicine cabinet in case you or someone you love needs it. So a lot of women, a lot of people are doing that. I did that so that I would have one on hand if someone I love needed an abortion. And it's undetectable. It's the same as a spontaneous miscarriage. So if you somehow need follow-up treatment, you could just go and say, you know, I'm bleeding, I'm not sure why, or my pregnancy is miscarrying.
So we're coming up on the break, Kelda. And folks, we're here with Kelda Royce, a state senator, a leader of women in our state, of the progressive voice. And on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about what we can do to address this. Look at some, they just took over a bunch of rights and they're taking them over. And it's about democracy, folks. So we'll be back about saving our democracy.